What's up, guys? Welcome back into the EPL Lounge. Your host, Josh, joined as always by the brilliant Sergio. Serge, match day one in the books. Premier League officially up and running. How are you feeling?
Feels amazing, Josh. Absolutely cracking first round. Amazing to have the fans back. I can't wait to dissect it. I was almost able to enjoy it in spite of what happened to Leeds United.
The fans is such a huge part. Like, proper football is back now with the fans. That's real Premier League football. It was so good to see. But for today, guys, we'll jump into a brief recap of match day one with our winners and losers. And then we're just going to go straight and tackle match day two and look ahead to next week's fixtures, key fixtures, if nothing else. Those of you at Pud School, though, we had a great weekend to start the Premier League, a perfect 3-0. Couldn't ask for much better. Our free pick on the live show last week, over 2.5 goals, West Ham, Newcastle, done and dusted by halftime. Absolute goals galore in that game in the end, which was always good. And we will definitely give out another free bet at the end of this show for match day two. But like I said, let's kick things off. Let's look at match day one. Let's talk at the biggest winners of match day one. Serge, I'll let you kick this one off. Who takes your winners column this week?
Well, I have to give a shout out to, before I get to my winners column, I have to give a shout out to Bruno Fernandes. I thought he was an absolute nightmare for Leeds United. Yes. Absolutely brilliant. Hat trick, amazing off the ball, running into the channels, impeccable on the ball as well. But I have excluded him from my list, Josh.
Oh, really? Is that like for any particular reason?
Purely out of spite. being on the receiving end as a lead supporter, I can't justify putting him on the list. But I do want to give him some credit for the performance. I think so. Top of my list, I've got the Brentford manager, Thomas Frank, and obviously the Brentford team for toppling Arsenal.
What a win. And obviously, not even just like a win. Like they outplayed them. They genuinely outclassed them, in every measurable category. Brentford won that game.
Absolutely. And that's really impressive, given it's their first game in the Premier League. And Arsenal is still one of the biggest clubs in the league. I don't care what you say. I thought that a giant slaying might be coming in another game this round, but it definitely came in the form of this one. And, it was embarrassing for Arsenal, but it was, I'm on the Brentford bandwagon now. I want to see what they can do this season after seeing that performance and the way they played and seeing the electricity in the stadium when they scored. It was really, really special.
Yeah, definitely.
Aside from Brentford, is nothing I love more than seeing an absolutely sublime free kick that just paralyzes every player around it, including the keeper. And we saw that with Marcus Alonso, opening goal for Chelsea. He took the free kick. It was in the back of the net before anyone even moved.
The moment it left his boot, it was absolutely destined for the net and nowhere else.
It was absolutely mesmerizing. So love that. And my final shout out for winners, another Premier League debut story, Cucho Hernandez at Watford, 22-year-old. He's been with the club a while, never made a Premier League appearance. He's been loaned out and shipped out. And that was an absolutely incredible strike, coming back inside, curling it against the right bar and past the keeper.
And ended up being the match winner as well, just to make it look even better.
Yeah, because there was actually a rally back in that game. They needed three goals, three goal cushion. So, fantastic for Hernandez and Watford.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, for my winners, I actually put down Solskjaer, largely not just because of the win itself and the emphatic manner, but the fact that he got the opportunity to play in front of the fans against a team who was going to play into his hands and who once again did so. I don't want to bring up bad memories and I don't want you going on an early rant here in the show, but, we spoke last week about whether Bielsa would adapt to what happened at Old Trafford, the previous season and change his approach. And I think we both agreed he wouldn't necessarily do so, but You know, I think it's obviously in hindsight fair to say that he should have, because, like I said, for the second season in succession, they dominated possession. They looked in control for probably large parts of the game and were just absolutely blown away on the counter. The spaces in behind, and United able to use the pace to get in there. And they were clinical, don't get me wrong, absolutely clinical. But I think, like I said, Solskjaer probably the biggest winner in all of this. You know, given the pressure, I think, on United after making their big signings and the expectations on them now to build off of that second place finish last season, it kind of got handed to him on a silver platter. So no bigger winner for me than Solskjaer this week, I think. The only other one I have down as well is home teams in the Premier League. 7 home teams winning out of 10, 70%, after just 36% won at home last season, the lowest in Premier League history. And I think it's fair to say, Serge, the fans had a very big part to play in some of those home wins, and they will do so for the remainder of this season.
And I'll be completely honest, and I don't think I speak for myself, but they not only had, you know, a role in like for the people in the stadium, but it had a massive role in my ability to enjoy the game.
Yeah,
being able to feel the emotion of the fans and their excitement and their disappointment. You know, I miss that so much, and it's amazing to have it back.
Yeah, definitely. Look, let's go to the biggest losers from match day one, though, the fallouts there. I'll kick this one off because I only have one. And it's Man City. I mean, it's probably not the most shocking thing in the world, but look, I guess come the end of the season, losing away to Tottenham probably isn't going to necessarily define the outcome for them as to whether they win the league or otherwise. But we spoke last week about just how close I think the top four is going to be this season. And on a weekend where the three of the four had already picked up 3 points, the pressure was absolutely on to go and do so. And while they dominated the game, I don't think that can be argued. The fact that they weren't able to come away with any points at all has them in a situation where they're playing catch-up immediately. And yes, it's only 3 points. Yes, it's only match day one. But I think the psychological impact it could have in the fact that they're chasing three potential or three genuine, I think, title contenders this season, as opposed to having to just focus on the one, is going to play its part as well, especially if those other three teams can continue building off of what was a pretty convincing match day one for all of them in the first month of football. If, you know, 4 or 5 games into the season, all three of them are still ahead of City because of, you know, results like this, I think it's going to play a very, very big part on City's psychological ability to sort of pull themselves out of it. And we'll see, I think, just how much they're made of.
Yeah, and on that point, Josh, if you want me to touch on Man City, you know, I agree with you, and then I disagree in some sense as well, because I think that the performance was quite good. But obviously, like with all their competitors getting off to such smashing starts, it does leave them playing catch up from day one, and you wonder whether the whether they are going to be impacted psychologically. Now, they did start last season quite slow and they were able to recover, so I guess time will tell on that front. But what I will say that's really interesting as well, we sort of spoke last week about what that team might be lacking, and it's the number nine, it's the striker up front. And even though they were able to play quite successfully without a really prolific number nine last season, they did always have Aguero, you know, in reserve. Yeah. Guardiola did want to play that way. But if you had to look at that performance and say what was missing, it was that striker. It was Harry Kane, basically, yeah. Or Aguero, probably not in Guardiola's mind. Never really fancied Aguero as his favourite style of player. But, you know, a lot of missed chances. I think everything was there from their performance aside from the finishing, and you can't help but look at that and say, you know, if you had a guy that just put the ball in the back of the net for fun, it might have been a different story. But we'll see if it's just a tale of one game or if it's going to be a trend.
I did say something. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this one. I saw an article, it actually came up before the City Tottenham game, saying that, you know, I can't remember who it was that wrote the article, so I can't even reference him by name, but he said that City were the biggest beneficiaries of last season and playing basically behind closed doors and without fans, and that this season with fans there again and with a team that arguably, I guess, lacks some backbone to an extent, they're going to be somewhat exposed, especially away from home this season. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you think that there's any truth potentially behind something like that?
What was the basis for him thinking that City would suffer the most from having fans back, or suffer the least from not having fans?
Essentially, prior to the lockdown again in the UK, we saw City sort of fall off a little bit and stumble sort of the back end of seasons, and I guess just struggle to really put teams away when they dominated, and also struggle to, I guess, stand up to tests when they were sort of pushed against. And we saw, he referenced European competition a fair bit where we see it, particular the season where they played Liverpool in the quarterfinals, had to go to Anfield for the first leg, and were just absolutely obliterated and blown away in that fixture, and how big an impact the fans had, not just on Liverpool's performance, but in unsettling Man City as well. And that they never really showed themselves capable of disproving that theory, because the fact that lockdown came into place and then they were able to play in, quote unquote, the comfort of empty stadiums where, they could play their style of football and dominate games in that way. The fact that, fans are now back and the team, like he said, hasn't actually shown itself capable of standing up to adversity as yet, they could be the ones that struggle the most this season.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I hadn't considered that at all, to be honest. Obviously, I'm aware of some of the shortcomings that City have had over the last couple of seasons, and I attribute it more to what I was discussing last week, which was that I really do believe the team has been in a transition phase where, most of their best players were coming to a certain age where, they're nearing retirement or at least sort of being phased out of the starting lineup. And what we've witnessed is Guardiola slowly phasing the key players out that he inherited and implementing his own style. And I think that that season, not last season, but the one prior where they did, and I guess the one before, they didn't do as well, was more symptomatic of, being in the midst of that. The other thing that's really interesting, as you pointed out, is that most of the time when City have, not done so well in terms of like the expected goals, which is a metric that, you use, it always indicates that they should be doing better. Yeah. So there's a couple of different ways to look at that. One is that they lose games that they should be winning. And the other way to look at it is that they're so good that they're always just, whether they're winning or losing, they always should be winning. I guess it depends on your perspective. But after hearing that, it's really interesting. Going to keep a close eye on how they play,
whether that's especially away from home. I think it'd be worth following and seeing how they do. Absolutely. But yeah, that's my only real match day one loser, I think, was City. No one else really fell flat where unexpected, and I don't think anything needs to be necessarily made of a lot of the teams that lost. Arsenal, I thought about it, but at the same time, A, yes, Brentford were excellent. B, Arsenal were just depleted, and that's evidence that the team, they lack squad depth drastically. So losing Aubameyang and Lacazette to illness before kickoff, no Party, you take away some key pieces from that team and they really do look like a mid-table side at absolute best. So I'm also willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. It's always tough going away from home in the Premier League now that fans are back in particular. And to do so missing arguably your three best players, it was always going to be tough. So I'm happy to give them a pass. And I didn't quite make the losers column this week, but I'm sure they'll be there many times throughout the rest of this season.
Well, Josh, I'm going to disappoint you with my losers column then, because I've got Arsenal.
Go for it.
front and center. Like, I just think that they were, all things considered, just absolutely abysmal. Just not good enough opening day. It's going to be a real disappointment for Arteta, and I'm not willing to give them a pass on any of the points that you mentioned. Like, I agree that they're factors, But given that this is Brentford, you know, it's their first game in the Premier League, it's opening day, I just think you have to bring more to the table. And look, if I was being completely honest, Leeds United may have fallen on this list. But what I've done instead, I was really disappointed with Robin Koch in that holding midfield role for Leeds United. So I've put him on my losers list.
Fair.
I just think, you know, for a German international to look that out of place and to really he just looked out of his depth in that role. He wasn't tracking players on the ball. He looked uncomfortable. I think it was more a case of he made a couple of mistakes early and it sort of snowballed and affected his confidence. And,
I wonder how much of it, like, the defensive side of things was him having lapses in concentration versus it being a systematic thing that Bielsa sort of instructed, that he didn't want him being pulled too far out of position and, you know, tracking Bruno Fernandes when he's making those runs in behind.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, that first goal was just inexcusable, I think. He just completely loses sight of him and Fernandes runs between the two centre-backs and he's completely unmarked. And given, you know, Pogba's touch was sublime and it went straight to Fernandes's feet, still you have to do better. And, you know, the commentators did say, like, you know, we see this guy getting taken off at halftime and replaced to shake up the formation. And Rodrigo got taken off instead, which I understand. But, yeah, just a real disappointment for me. Player of his quality to, you know, to let down the team. And obviously the way Leeds play, that holding midfield role is so important. When you're on the front foot and you're pressing and Manchester United, it's so dangerous on the counter-attack. Mm. You need a player in that position that is switched on. So
I was close to putting Bielsa on the losers column. I was just going to leave him off so that we didn't have to relive too much of this game for you. But I mean, seeing as how we're on the topic anyway, I have to put him on there because he clearly didn't learn from what happened against this team in this exact fixture last season. And like I said, just played into their hands. I completely understand and I'm all for, especially these lower teams, you know, wanting to take it to the big teams and not necessarily adapting a negative approach and still trying to play football. But I think you need to be able to find a balance. And especially on opening day, especially when you cop 60 last time around, to go out there and basically mirror the exact performance in that, you know, looked good for large chunks, were absolutely in the game for most part, had the most of possession. But again, it's just, you know, that's exactly what United wanted. And then they were able to exploit it accordingly.
Yeah, and from a Leeds fan perspective, just let me rant now, Josh. It was just so frustrating. I mean, even though we played on the front foot, we lacked so much quality in the final third. You know, I thought Rafinha did really well getting into good positions and trying to make things happen, but there were very few times where I really felt that we were going to score. And, you know, even though we did seem to be in the fight, and the equalizing goal was an absolute cracker from Ayling, but it did feel like it came out of nowhere. Preceded an absolute implosion.
We spoke about this off air and it was just that sort of 10-minute period where everything went wrong for them that absolutely swung the outcome of the game in drastic fashion, like straight after that Ayling goal. You look at the game and some of the data that I have here from it, United finished with a 1.64 XG despite scoring 5 goals. So it's not like they created a whole heap of clear-cut chances. They were just very clinical with the half chances that came their way, which, you know, they've been in the past as well, particularly guys like Mason Greenwood, who I thought his goal was very well taken, but he's really made a reputation for himself for being one of the most clinical forwards in the Premier League. His expected goals versus goals last season was absolutely astonishing. And again, you know, to start this one, yeah, he got on the scorecard, but, you know, the shot that he took and expected goal, let me just pull it up really quickly. Yeah. His expected goals from that particular shot was a 0.14 from that angle.
Wow.
On his weaker foot, I guess, as well, probably plays its part in why it got ranked so low. So, like I said, clinical again from United, but it's not like they necessarily created anything clear-cut. So, you know, more than happy to rein United fans back in who are just going absolutely mental on social media that they're going to win the league and run away with it. You know, at the end of the day, he scored 6 against his team last season, so it's a step backwards, if anything. Right, Serge?
It felt like a step backwards for me. Look, yeah, it was just a really, really disappointing game. You know, the approach was admirable, but as you said, this is the thing. Like, you can play on the front foot, you can try and take the game to them. One, you've got to have a little bit more quality in the final third, which Leeds didn't have. But two, most importantly, you've got to be prepared, especially a team that is so prolific on the counter and has that pace and can hurt you. You've got to be prepared when they come back at you. And Leeds just never seemed prepared. The amount of space the United players were getting all game, first half, second half, from all situations, especially like running into the box from the midfield. These players weren't getting tracked. It was just, it was tough to watch. It was painful.
I was thinking of you throughout the whole game that I was watching it. I was just thinking, man, Serge must be absolutely burning watching this unfold.
I forgot a really important point. There's two reasons why I had Robin Koch on my list. One was the performance, and the second was I probably would have spared him if not for this comment that I saw. They interviewed him a couple of days ago, and he said that this is going to be a tougher season for Leeds United, which it may be, but I don't like to hear that after like a 5-1 flogging. Like, you're almost setting the expectation that the team is going to go backwards. You can't put that out into the universe. And he's probably, you know, just, I don't know. I don't like that.
Yeah, fair. I wouldn't like it as a fan either, to be perfectly honest. But, hey, look, let's leave it at that. I won't let you harp on it too much longer. Anyone else in your losers column before we look ahead to match day two?
Just those two.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think a whole heap of other standouts for me. But let's go ahead and look at next week. Let's take a look at some of the key fixtures there. Plenty of exciting ones. Early kickoff this week, my beloved Liverpool at home to Burnley. For those of you watching it live, you can see there 2.85 for Liverpool, 0.84 for Burnley is the projected score for us using our punt score model. I expect it to be just as comfortable as the model says it is, to be honest. Anfield is going to be absolutely rocking. Let's not forget, Anfield hasn't been full since Liverpool won the league. So this is going to absolutely be, I guess, a very belated party, if you will, for the home fans, and they will make it known. A little bit of revenge as well, given Burnley came here and pulled off a ridiculous win last season. But, man, I'll say it again, Serge, we're going to win the league. Like, we look so good against Norwich, and I don't care that it was just Norwich. Away from home, against a team with nothing to lose. The fact that Van Dijk looked like he hasn't missed a game was just amazing to see. The fact that the front three looked so fluid again, Jota starting, and then even obviously when Firmino came on and it looked like the old Liverpool, if you want to call it that. But the assurance that the team has and the confidence that they play with Van Dijk on the field and just having, you know, two natural centre-backs on the pitch is just so evident for me. I didn't even think that we were close to full strength. I mean, you look at that midfield, maybe Naby Keita is the only one you can make an argument for as being a regular starter in the centre of the park. But, you know, Fabinho didn't start, Thiago wasn't available, Jordan Henderson was, you know, sat this one out. I actually thought Oxlade-Chamberlain was really quite poor in the middle of the field. And Milner wasn't much better for, you know, he did his part and what he needed to do. But considering, yeah, like I said, an area of the field that's so important was so under strength and somewhat underwhelming that they still managed to pull a win out like that and a performance like that. I think we absolutely roll Burnley in a big way. And you know, a 3 or 4-0 win is absolutely on the cards for me.
Yeah. tough to see anything other than, you know, a pretty similar result and performance from last week, especially, you know, playing at Anfield now. The fans are really going to get behind the team, and, you know, Burnley didn't have a good start to the season. So,
I actually think Burnley are going to be one of those teams battling relegation this year. You made a good point about Brighton last week's show being sort of that team who, when you just aim to sort of stay in the Premier League for so long, but you don't necessarily show the ambition to get better. I think Burnley is that team. Like, they fit everything that you said. They fit that mold and description to a T. And, you know, Sean Dyche isn't exactly the most creative manager in the world. I think if things start going pear-shaped a little bit, it's absolutely going to be a case of Burnley battling relegation come the end of this season.
Absolutely. And look, on the topic of Liverpool winning the league, you know, the only thing I will say is that I'm hearing the same thing from Manchester United supporters. I'm hearing the same thing from Chelsea supporters. It was business as usual for all the big teams, bar Man City's. So all the teams we talked about in week one that had to step it up this season couldn't afford to go backward. They all made big statements on day one. And, you know, for me, from my perspective, it's difficult to separate whether Liverpool or United or Chelsea was the most impressive. But, you know, they all did exactly what they intended to do. Almost if you had to imagine how the game was going to play out. They're all very, very dominant displays. So
I'll help you out. I'll rank them. Liverpool's performance was the most impressive, and that's bias aside. And then I'd probably United just after that. I actually thought Chelsea's performance was a little bit underwhelming, even though it was a pretty convincing scoreline. I mean, like you said, that free kick was absolutely stunning, and, you know, that opens the scoring for them. The second goal, nice little bit of build-up, a little bit of luck as well. You know, keeper comes out, pushes it into the path of Pulisic, it was, that ended up putting it in the back of the net. Yeah. You know, third goal, well taken, outside the box, hit it well, you know, given the time and space to do so. But other than that, they didn't create a whole lot. I'm just looking at my sheet that I've got open. 3-0 winners. They finished with a 1.19 XG. So really didn't create a whole heap. That said, they kept Palace to basically nothing at all. So it was a professional display, I think, is the word you would use for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess one of those dominant cruise control displays. And, you know, we go back to the old adage that a champion team wins easily even when they don't play well. I think maybe it was an example of that.
Yeah, fair point. Let's move to the second game, though. I think we're just in agreeance, Liverpool here by probably two or more. It just makes a lot of sense. I don't have a ton of players, I don't think, that we'll be playing in this one. The over three goals does stand out a little bit for me. You know, Liverpool can probably get that on their own, so you might be better off just looking at a team total for that one. But Leeds, next up, against Everton at Elland Road. You said last week you thought Elland Road would be one of those venues that is just going to be absolute mayhem with fans back in there. They're probably going to need to be as vocal and as boisterous as ever, I think, just to help their team get back on track. Worth noting, though, last season, after they went and got obliterated at Old Trafford 6-2, they ended up winning the next three games and doing so in pretty impressive fashion. Do you foresee a bounce back for your beloved men this week, Serge?
Absolutely. And look, if you look at the best, the most well, I say that Leeds are going to be one of the teams that benefits from having crowds back, not only out of personal bias, even though that may be a factor, but you just look at the way the fans filled up the stadiums, even when Leeds were in League One. So obviously being in the third division of football, still getting like 35,000, you know, 16 years out of the top league, they're still getting good crowds. And this is a team with a club with a pretty rich history and a reputation for having a really, really passionate supporter base. And look, similar to what we're going to see at Anfield, I think it's going to be the same at Elland Road. The fans are going to absolutely bring the house down. I tell you that much. And, you know, I'll never forget the season that Leeds actually got relegated, and all to the end, the fans were just screaming and chanting, and you know, nothing could discourage them. So
yeah,
just on that basis alone, and like you said, I don't feel, even though the performance was disappointing, I don't think that they're going to dwell on it, put it that way. Yeah. I think that Bielsa is a sort of manager that's like, look, that's done. It's Manchester United away. Like, this is a new game. This is a new opportunity to kick the season off.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to 3.
I absolutely agree. For those watching again, you can see the projected scoreline in the brackets there from our model. Leeds 2.07, Everton 1.17. I think this is the perfect buyback spot on Leeds. I think almost definitely we'll be getting involved in the home side in this one, not just because of the clear market edge we have in the model, but, you know, like you said, I just think it's the perfect opportunity for them to respond in front of what's going to be an incredible crowd. And I also think, more importantly, Everton don't pose anywhere near the same threat United do on the counter at all. Like, that's just plain and simple. That's not their style of football. It wasn't under Ancelotti, and it's not going to be under Benitez, I can assure you that much. They'll be tidy and they'll be organized, and they'll look to frustrate where possible, and I guess almost suck the life out of the crowd a little bit, I think will be the approach, just based on how, you know, Benitez likes to go into these fixtures away from home. They came off of a good, impressive win, don't get me wrong, but their best football came very late on in that game. And, you know, I'd argue they only really started to look good after they took the lead at 2-1. It was very laborious performance aside from that. There was nothing necessarily too clear-cut. You know, their best chance, the final goal of the game, Calvert-Lewin, that secured the 3 points for them. But, you know, a little bit fortunate perhaps with the first goal, I think, the way it just fell in for Richarlison to pounce. A more organised defence probably doesn't let that happen. The longer that game went on at 1-0 for Southampton, I started to genuinely worry whether Everton would be able to even get a point. So, you know, they needed that moment of luck, I think, to equalise and to sort of swing momentum back their way. But, yeah, for me, going on the road here, I just don't see how they caused too many issues for Leeds, given that I think that the home side are going to be the ones that, again, dominate possession, again, sort of dictate the tempo of the game, and, again, are going to be in the ascendancy for the most part. For me, the Toffees don't necessarily have the pieces to be able to play on the counter and to take advantage of the spaces in behind the same way United did. So, yeah, I think it's probably going to be a clear-cut win for Leeds, at least, you know, a game that they genuinely dominate from start to finish. And yeah, I don't trust Everton's defense anywhere near enough to say that they'll be able to hold them out, that's for sure. So good news, Serge. I'm with you 100% of the way here. I think an absolutely convincing win for them here, and I'll almost definitely be getting involved with them in this one. But let's look at another team leading a bounce back. City at home to Norwich. No projections for this one. If you didn't watch last week, we just don't have projections for the newly promoted clubs until a few weeks into the season. I don't think we need any projections to say that City are just going to absolutely come and tear Norwich apart in front of their home fans, right?
Yeah. I mean, I like, you'd have to be brave to say anything else was going to happen in this fixture. City at home, coming off a really disappointing loss in round one, this just isn't a game that they lose.
Look, just pulling it up as well, that game against Tottenham, City finished with a 2.11 expected goal return, Tottenham a 1.06. So easily the biggest margin for a losing team in match day one, which, like you said, probably not all that surprising because that's just what City do, right? They dominate. And they create the better chances almost every single game.
What a baptism of fire for Norwich. Jesus.
Yeah, I think Norwich are just going to cop the absolute brunt of it here. And you got to feel for them. And you wonder whether it just – how much psychological damage could this do to them if they go and cop, you know, 3-4, maybe even 5 goals at City after losing 3-0 at home already. And – you know, you start as a player, I think it's going to be only natural a lot of them start thinking about their previous time in the Premier League.
you could just imagine in preseason, like them get someone getting a phone call and just saying, look, you've got Liverpool on day one and Man City on day two. I'll be like, you're joking, right? Like, that's a nightmare. But I mean, you know, you'd like to think that, you know, they're not expecting to get anything from those games anyway.
Yeah.
So even a point might be seen as a bonus. And, you know, if the manager can sort of instill that sort of mindset, like maybe they'll feel like their season starts after this period. But
yeah,
I think in reality it is going to hurt their confidence a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's going to rattle them a little bit for sure. And like I said, a straightforward City win for me here. I don't see any value in any markets here. I don't think there will be, but we can leave that one at that. Next up, though, United are away from home for the first time this season. They head to Southampton in this one. Projected score for us probably tighter than what I actually anticipate this game to be. Southampton 1.26, Man U 1.66. Not too far off of market lines, though, to be fair. What are you thinking here, Serge? Is it going to be pretty straightforward for Solskjaer's men once again?
I think so. On the back of that performance in round one, that was really, really impressive. You see them carrying on here. I actually think, you know, with Varane officially signed now, I don't think that was made official until the weekend. But...
Sorry, I think my mic was muted for whatever reason. But, yeah, I think he was officially unveiled at the game, so the signing is done and dusted now.
And I think, yeah, I think that's a tremendous signing for them, as I think Sancho will be. So I think they're going to have a really good season. I expect them to get the 3 points in this one.
Yeah, I expect 3 points as well. But I do think it'll be a little bit closer than what most think, just because – I know we're going to harp on about it. We're going to sound like broken records in this bloody episode, Serge, but home fans, man, I'm telling you, like, you know, especially first game back for a lot of these fans for their teams in quite a long time. So they'll be loud. They'll make their presence felt, if nothing else. I don't think it's enough to necessarily get Southampton over the line or anywhere near it in this one, but I think in the early stages, you know, they can absolutely have the home team sort of playing above their level for the opening exchanges, if nothing else. And, you know, if they can take advantage of it and sneak a goal and are able to sort of hold on to something going forward for the, you know, remaining 60, 70, 80 minutes after that, then who knows? But I think the concern for me for Southampton is that you've got another manager, Ralph Hasenhüttl, who likes to just play his style of football no matter who the opponents are, and that's to try and get forward and that's to play expansive football. And obviously, you know, you do that against Man U, and if you're not disciplined enough at the back, you'll get punished pretty severely.
As we saw, I've actually got a question for you, Josh. I don't want to go off track too much, but, you know, we've been talking a lot about this home field advantage, home ground advantage. And I wonder whether, do you feel like the home ground advantage this season is going to be more significant than the seasons prior to COVID, because there has been such a time that has passed without fans and they're extra fired up and therefore they have more impact on the players? Or do you think it's going to be just the way it was previously?
Look, that is a really good question, and it's something I've debated with myself many times, because I think it can go one of two ways, right? Like, I think part of home ground advantage is getting that referee's whistle, right? You know, the fans influencing the referees. And, you know, I wonder how much of it is, having had a full season of not being impacted by fans, are refs sort of more attuned to calling the game as they see it now without the outside influence? In which case, does that take away a little bit of that home ground advantage that you would normally see on a week-to-week? But then the flip side, like you said, because it feels like it's been so long and because the atmosphere that's going to be created now in every game is going to feel tenfold louder than what it was pre-COVID, you know, I think it's also only human nature as a referee to be influenced and to be impacted by that. You can't tell me as a referee that you are not somewhat persuaded by 60,000 people yelling, for a whistle or for a free kick or for a penalty or whatever it might be. It's such a hard one to answer. I think I do believe that this season we're going to see more home teams winning and picking up points than we have probably in the last, say, 5 or 6 seasons in the Premier League.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you're right. I think that we're going to see a pronounced home ground advantage like we haven't seen before. I don't think it's going to be like double the win rate. What is the average sort of like percentage of home wins?
I think off the top of my head, so pre-COVID, if you looked at the 5 seasons pre-COVID, I think home teams won about 45 to 46% of games in the Premier League. And then last season with no fans, that dropped drastically, where home teams only won, I think it was like 34 to 36% of games, which is just insane to see a 10% drop.
Well, I'll predict something like a 50 to 55% win rate.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't be shocked by it whatsoever. I do think the more I sort of speak out loud to it, the more I can see a season where home teams are picking up points with more regularity, especially against some of the teams who are the bigger teams, if you will, and the teams that are above them, wherever they might be on the ladder.
Yeah, I don't think referees are going to be any better at calling the game objectively and blocking out the fan noise personally. Yeah. But we'll see.
So, for this one, I do, like I said, I lean Man U winning this one, but not probably in necessarily emphatic fashion. I don't think it's going to be the explosive game it was in Leeds, but I do think we might see a few goals in this one as well. Probably won't get involved in the markets, lean towards an overs though nonetheless here. Let's look at another interesting one though. Wolves, Tottenham. Nuno is back home if you will, for this game. Obviously a lot of storylines here write themselves, but for me, I think the big one is Wolverhampton looked good in week one. They were unlucky against Leicester, I thought. They were the better team. They created the better chances. I loved what I saw from them going forward. They gave up very little defensively as well. It was a fantastically taken goal by Vardy. Really difficult skill to hit it across his body like that and at that angle to steer it home. Aside from that goal, Leicester didn't create a whole heap. And like I said, Wolves did create a handful of chances that they probably should have taken. And aside from Man City, they were the only other team in match day one to create the better XG over 90 minutes and walk away with 0 points to show for it.
Yeah, and I mean, Tottenham weren't particularly, like, despite the result, they weren't particularly impressive against City. And, you know, we've still got that that question mark over Kane's future, and you wonder how they're going to back it up. I mean, I'm personally tipping draw for this one. I think that would be a fantastic outcome for Wolves. But, like you said, a lot of subplots and plots in this match. So I'm really excited about this one.
I like a draw. I think Wolves take away a point here at the bare minimum, to be perfectly honest. I also think that, for me, probably one of the bets of the round, not the official best bet this week, but it'll be a bet I get involved in, is the overs. It's sitting down as low as 2. So, you know, if it finishes with 1-1, you'll get a push. You won't lose your bet. Or if it finishes 2-0, you won't lose your bet either. But I think that is so low. And it's based, I think, as well, just off of last season a lot. Naturally, understandably, given that that's where the markets are going to be pulling their data from. It's where we pull our data from. But, you know, you can see here in the projected brackets, we have Wolves winning 1.92, Tottenham 1.3. That's a lot of goals to be projected in this fixture. And the reason I can see it playing out that way is that Wolves did play that expansive attacking football that, you know, we weren't sure they were going to necessarily, whether the manager would bring that same sort of philosophy to a club where, you know, it's one thing to do it in Portugal when you're coaching one of the biggest teams in a league where it's, you know, very top heavy. And it's another thing to do it in a league where, you know, you're kind of in the bottom tier, if you will, for talent and personnel. But, you know, they did it effectively and they looked really good and comfortable in doing so. And you look at what Nuno did at Wolves and what he did for Tottenham in match day one, and that's his, you know, that's his style. Compact, they sit deep, they absorb pressure, and they look to play on the counter and get in behind you. And they're going to be able to do so again because of the absolute pace and talent of guys like Son, and even Bergwijn, I think, is a fantastic player and drastically underrated. But they'll be able to find space in behind and absolutely exploit Wolves, I think, on the counter and create plenty of clear-cut chances. But at the same time, I think Wolves will absolutely be able to create the same on this Tottenham team who, like I said, gave up some really good chances. And I know it's Man City, but, you know, once again, they're away from home here, and I think the home crowd's going to play its part for Wolverhampton. And, yeah, like I said, I really love goals in this game, and I think the Wolves getting at least a point is also a really, really good way to look at it here. There's a comment for you as well, Serge. Adama Traore to fire the lads after missing some gilt edge chances. So I tell you what, if any one player needs to sort of make amends for wasteful finishing in week one, it's that man right there.
Yeah, I'm always torn between, you know, admiring a player for being in the thick of the action and like putting himself in positions to you know, to score goals or to create goals, which we saw at Adama Traore in both situations. But, you know, when you lack that little bit of quality on the finish or on the final pass, or, you know, you hesitate, it can be very frustrating, which is, I guess, similar to what we saw with Rafinha, in my opinion. It was a similar sort of performance where he was on the ball a lot and he was making things happen, but it's just that little bit of lack of quality on the end of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, overs for me in this one. Wolves picking up at least something. I think both of them are fantastic angles that I'll be getting involved with. Last one, though, for match day two that we'll look at, Serge, the London Derby, Arsenal-Chelsea. The projections for this one, for those watching can see it, but for those listening on the podcast, probably a closer game than I think what we might anticipate. Arsenal 1.32, Chelsea 1.58. It likes them to just edge this one away from home. Man, look, it's a derby, right? Anything can happen. Arsenal cannot be any worse, I don't think. An interesting stat, I think, coming out of that Brentford game as well. Mikel Arteta's Arsenal have never won a game where they've been trailing at halftime under his leadership. So I don't make of that what you will, I guess. But for me, I do think that this is going to be a dogfight. I do think it's going to be scrappy and ugly. And I don't think there's going to be a ton of chances either side. You know, while the model does say the overs is a play here, I personally think it could be the other way. And I think, you know, a goal could potentially do it here.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a London derby and always, you know, they tend to always be good games. And, you know, the form goes out the window. Like, you know, Arsenal will come into this game believing that, you know, that they can actually make something happen here. So, yeah, always tough to predict. I still want to go Chelsea, but I do think it's going to be a serious battle, and I do think that Arsenal are going to put up quite a fight. And that's a really interesting point that Arsenal haven't managed to come back after halftime if they've been down. And, you know, like you see Arteta's, again, Arteta's a manager that and a football mind that I really like, but, you know, he's very mild-mannered, even as a player, very steady. And you can see that he's not the sort of manager that would have a really easy time firing up his players when it's needed. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting, like Derby Day, when everyone's naturally fired up, how that personality plays in and what he's able to actually bring out of his team. But nonetheless, this is a game that obviously probably the game of the round for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's probably also the one game where I wonder whether the home fans could have a negative influence on the team, especially if Chelsea go a goal up. You know, are we going to see them voicing their frustrations, you know, if they go into halftime a goal down and are underperforming and just sort of, you know, struggling to get a foothold in the game? And, you know, for all the talk we've done this entire episode about how home fans are going to be so influential, I think I think, look, it could, we could be completely wrong, but there's every chance, in my opinion, that this is that one fixture where it might actually backfire for Arsenal.
I've watched enough Arsenal fan TV to know that it's a very real possibility that the fans returning could work against Arsenal. So I'll keep my eye on that one. And if they lose this game, I'm definitely going to be firing up the old Arsenal fan TV.
Yeah, it's definitely time to get back on it, I think. But look, I probably lean Chelsea just as well to pull out the points. I don't think it'll be convincing. Not that they've been convincing in any game this season. I know it's only one Premier League game, but the same against Villarreal. I didn't think that they were very good against Villarreal in that Super Cup game, winning in penalties. But hey, this, especially at this point of the season, right, it's just about banking up wins. It doesn't matter how you get them, and it's just about playing yourselves into form. So for me, yeah, Chelsea probably just scratch this one. The model shows an edge on the over 2.25 goals. I don't know if I'll be pulling the trigger there, though. But like I said, that's it for Match Day 2's previews that we'll talk about. The one best bet, though, I will give out before we wrap the show up. Aston Villa, Newcastle this weekend. We didn't talk about the game, but it'll be my best bet. It'll be over 2.75 goals. So a half win if three goals are scored, full win if it's more than three. I can see this one easily clearing four goals. The model has Aston Villa winning 2.28 to 1.03. Yes, it does. You know, that's sort of based off of the Jack Grealish Aston Villa, if that's what you want to call them. But I still think that there's a lot of attacking talent there. And I think we will see the best of them in this fixture back home against a Newcastle side that just is not very good at all. We're humbled at home 4-2 by West Ham. Gave up a 3.01 XG. That was officially the highest of match day one. So, I mean, credit West Ham for being able to go away from home and create more chances than anyone else in the league. But I think that is exactly what Newcastle is about this season, exactly why I tipped them for relegation again this year. I do think that they'll create chances, though, and score goals like they did in this one, just because of the talent that they have in that front third. You know, we saw Saint-Maximin combining with Callum Wilson perfectly for that first goal. And that's exactly what those two are capable of if you give them the opportunity to do so. But at the other end of the field, yeah, Villa should be able to create plenty and I think get themselves back on track this season. They do have enough attacking talent still there, even in the absence of Grealish. Any reason you don't expect goals in this fixture, Serge?
No, I agree with you. I think that first round performance is going to be emblematic of what the season is going to look like for Newcastle. I think they'll find themselves managing to score goals, but obviously, you know, it looks like they're going to be conceding a fair few as well. It looks like a good tip from you because that was not a pretty round one for them.
Yeah, no, it was not at all. But like I said, for us, we are coming off a perfect 3-0 match day one at Punt School. So if you want to get involved, just head to puntschool.com. You can drop your email in. You get a full 2 weeks for free, no questions asked. We would get you on that mailing list. Looking at the model for this one, I can just see straight away off the top of my head, I've got the screen open. We're probably going to have 1, 2, 3, 4 plays for this weekend at a bare minimum. Your market movement might create some other ones, but some really interesting ones, I think. And some I feel a little bit confident about, in particular, the one I just mentioned. But Serge, that'll do us for second episode of the EPL Lounge. Appreciate you taking the time, as always, to jump on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me and looking forward to another incredible weekend of Premier League action with the fans back and Leeds back and, yeah, it's all happening.
It'll be better this weekend, Serge, I promise. It'll be better.
I trust you.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, as always, wherever it is you're watching. Drop us a like if you're tuning into the live show. Drop us a nice review as well if you're listening to the podcast. That'd be great. We'll be back again, same time next week, I think, to wrap up match day 2, take a look at match day 3. So best of luck to all of you with all of your wagers. Best of luck to all of your teams, unless, of course, you support Man U. Serge, see you next week, same time, my man.
See you then, mate.